Item number four, a resolution ordinance by Supervisors Bowen, Rainey, and Johnson Jr. enacting a minimum living wage ordinance for service, concession, lease, and financial assistance agreements publicly funded by Milwaukee County and amending Chapter 32.09, Sub 17 of the Milwaukee County Code of General Ordinances. On December 16, 2013, this item was laid over.
Thank you. Supervisor Bowen.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and I'm glad that we can reach this item now. I know we have a lot of people from the community that are here to see this through, and a lot of them are excited that there are some people on this board in county government that support those who are making the least among us. And I think it's something that we have the opportunity to do, looking at the issues that are in our community. So I want to just set the context really quickly of what's been going on for, I guess, the last month and a half. We all had a break. We all had holidays. Got to see our families. And some things have developed in the community and nationally. The county executive has come out in opposition to living wage, and there's been a clear effort to stop the progress of this policy that would benefit so many people on the bottom who normally don't have those in leadership to advocate for them. He also, at the same time, after the budget that we have approved, has not lowered the pay of the top wage earners in the county. After this county board went through and said that we were changing policy, he now believes that he doesn't have to follow that policy. Also, the President of the United States last night just spoke in his State of the Union address, and his main focus is economic issues and addressing issues of poverty. He, by executive order, is about to do the very same thing that we are about to do, and imposing on all federal contracts the enforcement of paying those employees a higher wage. And I think that speaks volumes of what we are embarking on here in Milwaukee County and the other 140 municipalities where this has been done. People have been screaming bloody murder that this will make the sky fall. But we have clearly seen in all those other opportunities where this has been done that that is not the case. So there has been collaboration on the county board to make sure the support is in there. And I want to thank my colleagues for working with me, co-sponsor Khalif Rainey, and those supporting living wage to make sure that we can find that compromise. So I do believe we have an amendment available and that can be distributed to the committee. I don't see a copy in front of me, so I know it's probably not out yet, but I did get a chance to send it to you prior so you could see it. I want to go ahead and break down the compromise with myself and Supervisor Cullen. And I want to thank Supervisor Cullen for working with me on that. The compromise amendment that you have in front of you would have the wage level of 100% of the federal poverty line at $11.33 an hour. Yeah, I'll take one, too. Thank you. At $11.33 an hour, which equates to $23,550 a year. That would be the new floor in Milwaukee County on all county funds. There would be no phase-in, and it would go into effect immediately and when contracts are renewed.
All right. Yeah.
There will be no effect on land sales. There also will be an amendment from Supervisor Mayo on concerns that he had as well, and I want to thank Supervisor Mayo for working with me as well and supporting living wage. And I'll allow Supervisor Mayo to bring those forth and to explain those as well. But what we have in front of us lowers the risk Milwaukee County is taking in this endeavor. If you remember, the comptroller's report had a lot of numbers, and it was the worst case scenario of if you impose a living wage and if all these factors are just one way, this is what it would look like if the county blows up. But I can assure you that has not happened in the other municipalities where this has been done. So the risk is lower from the 110% rate to 100, which equates to about half the amount. I know there are concerns with family care, and I want to be very clear that the average wage in family care is 1054, and that gap from 1054 to 1133 is substantially more feasible for them to accomplish. So I would ask that my colleagues support the Cullen-Bowen Amendment and allow Milwaukee County to get rid of poverty wage jobs.
Supervisor Bowen. Thank you, Supervisor Bowen. Supervisor Cullen, do you have anything else to add?
Well, not really. I think that Supervisor Bowen did a good job summarizing what's occurred, and I appreciate his working with me, and I think that's sort of the way the process is supposed to work. You know, our attempt was to move this county in the right direction, and I think we're doing that. I'm interested to see what Supervisor Mayo has regarding the airport, because I haven't seen anything yet. And, you know, there may be something later coming on family care. I don't know. I mean, I did receive an email yesterday from the director of family care saying that by having an amendment such as this, they estimate that the financial impact on them would be substantially less than the current proposal. So, you know, I think that discussion still can be had if we're doing the right thing with family care. And I know Supervisor Stamper had put some effort on some of the family care issues, and I don't know if he's satisfied with where this is with family care, but I too would hope our colleagues could support this. Thank you.
Would you move to approve?
Oh, I'll move to approve.
Supervisor Cullen moves to approve Amendment 1. Moves to adopt Amendment 1. For those, we have to get used to, because of Act 14, some items are to be adopted as opposed to approved. For many years, we've been approving items, but we have to make the transition to adopt items, particularly because of Act 14. Is Supervisor Mayo available? I saw him here earlier. Okay. We will probably hear from him on board day. Supervisor Jersey?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm just wondering, with regard to the amendment, and just to say, you know, I do want to be respectful on the living wage changes. I've spent some significant time this week talking with one of the proponents, and I specifically was hoping to see the amendments. And no amendments were provided, so this is the first time I've seen amendments. I'm wondering if the comptroller hasn't had an opportunity to update his financial review of this and the impact for the county. I mean, I had significant concerns last time we heard from the comptroller. Has the comptroller seen the amendments? Is there going to be an updated financial statement?
There should be. There should be updated fiscal.
Is that available today?
I can comment, Mr. Chair.
Supervisor Bowen.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. I wanted to make it clear that the numbers will be available by board day, and we're not available to be done today on short notice, but I have confirmation from the comptroller's office that they can crunch the numbers and show you the lower number of since we have a lower wage in this compromise to have available for you to check out.
Well, Mr. Chair, could I hear from the comptroller? I mean, I think the comptroller can speak for himself. Has he seen the changes? Has he had an opportunity to review this? I mean, I think I'm going to be asked to vote on this today.
Yes.
And
you will be accommodated. You will be accommodated.
I have been asking to see amendments.
Okay.
And for whatever reason, the amendments were not previously shown to me.
Mr. Matzke, our independent comptroller, please.
This is the first day that I've seen the amendment that's here, but we will be doing an updated fiscal note prior to board day based upon the changes that are here.
Thank you.
Well, for myself, first of all, I don't believe in having unfairness, and I do think living wage should be given to all workers. I definitely believe that. And I would be happy to work with anyone to get living wages. And you know, I listened to the president's speech, and you know, there is a wide consensus for raising the minimum wage, even among Republicans.
We're going to do this civilly, which means that there shouldn't be any outbursts. We want to get this work done, and I'd appreciate it if we act civilly toward one another. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I appreciate that. And I actually appreciate all the hard work that the people are here for committee. I know this is the second time. You've spent a lot of time working on this and fighting for it, and I actually appreciate your efforts, because this country needs to have a higher minimum wage. And I get the political piece, too. You know, you haven't been able to do this in D.C. You haven't been able to do this in Madison. So here we are at the local level. Unfortunately, I don't have the tools. You know, I'm opposed to an unequal distribution of living wage. And what we're doing here is for contracted employees, no guarantee that these contracted employees are even Milwaukee County residents, because it's the contractor that will do the hiring. Now, I understand probably a far majority are Milwaukee County residents, but I do understand that it is Milwaukee County residents, those that pay rents and property taxes, that will be paying for this change. And I truly do want to see financial statements. I don't know how I'm going to be asked to vote for this today, but it does concern me a bit that amendments, for whatever reason, aren't being shared with every supervisor that has expressed some concerns about this. I just don't know that this is the way to approach getting the minimum wages raised in this country. I understand sometimes you have to deal with the realities of where you have political clout. But truly, if this is going to affect our family care program, it will be very easy for this board to lose control over the family care program. And I just really, truly hope that those who are asking supervisors to do this at the local level understand the kind of repercussions we may be facing if we do it. I've asked my constituents to weigh in on this. And in hearing from my constituents, I come from a 50-50 district. I have strong opinions being given to me from my constituents who are not in agreement with this. So, you know, I do represent my constituents. I truly want to be fair about this, and in my heart of hearts, I believe the minimum wage is too low. But what are you asking this board to do? We truly do not have surpluses to deal with, and we truly have tremendous deficits. So, Mr. Chair, I can't vote on this without financial statements. I need to see the fairness of it. So, board day, perhaps, when I have the financial statement from Mr. Mansky, perhaps there's some way I can see supporting that based on what we're given. But without that today, there's no way I'm voting to change my position from the last time we talked about this. Thank you.
Thank you, Supervisor. And I appreciate what you've said, as much as the fiscal note has not been prepared, is not before us. It will be available to us on board day. Supervisor Mayo has just called to indicate that he will offer his amendment on board day, so we will have an opportunity to take a look at that. Supervisor Smith and Cullen.
Thank you. I've been up front from the very beginning on this issue. I've met several times. Mr. Rickman went to constituency house in my district and got barraged by the one side. I also represent a district that is much more complex than the great majority of my colleagues sitting here, much like Supervisor Jurczyk's. So I have to speak up for the silent majority and the many emails I've gotten finally from people questioning or looking into the issue. I don't think it was well-versed. It was well-vetted by the proponents, obviously. I hope my colleagues know I respect what they do in backing their constituents. And I guess I'll let my record or what I've done over the years to stand if they think I'm sincere or not. I don't mind saying, and I'm not looking for sympathy, I'm not changing my vote. I believe I have something to stand. I'm not voting for this today. And I have a number of reasons in my heart. I prayed over this morning, if anybody cares. And I don't appreciate hearing. I'm willing to talk. I've listened. I'll listen more to other people. I'm speaking for about 85% of the population. I do have a side note that I'm proud of to mention, and when I talked to Supervisor Bowen the very, very beginning, 6 months ago, whatever it was, 4 months ago, because we went through this process, and there can be repercussions that we just don't see. The hotel would not have been built on the county grounds if we went ahead and did this. I think it would have been a terrible situation to have. We've pit unions against unions still yet. There is, you know, we talk about polls and we talk about statistics. There's an MU poll. MU has got kind of a good reputation. This came out with some polls on the governorship and things like that. There is an MU poll that was just put out that says two-thirds Wisconsinites support raising minimum wage, but only 15% favor going over $10 per hour. So that's 15% over $10 per hour. That's 85% under for the poll. That's the poll results. It's a representative poll. So I guess I have to make sure I speak for the more silent majority, certainly not the people here. It's not popular to say this. I understand that. But it's what the market bears. I don't think how you can throw out in a system you can just, you know, just go up. You know, there's 140 municipalities and counties, I guess, who have done something like this or close to it. I told Supervisor Bowen, for example, well, we should do it gradual. It should be like 9, then 10. I think it is too much of a jump. I know people don't agree with that, but that's how I sincerely feel. I too feel we should be doing more. I think I'm going to make an example. I don't know if anybody watched the whole State of the Union address. I did. And in that address, they mentioned they had someone stand up. Person's name is John, and his employee. Two people have found Punch Pizza in St. Paul, Minneapolis. It's relevant. That's why I'm giving the story. And my daughter started working there when she was a senior, junior, senior in college, working at this is a Neapolitan pizza place, specialty place. They've gone from 10 years to like 7 locations now in the greater Twin Cities area where she lives. Stayed up there, married a Minnesota guy. She's like third in command now, so I'm very proud of her. And what they did and why they were recognized in the State of the Union, the president asked the two gentlemen to stand up besides the veteran, which was wonderful, of course, at the end. But they have raised the wages of all their employees to a minimum of $10 an hour. Now, that doesn't sound like a lot, maybe, but this is a an area where you get a lot of low-level entry and first-time workers, et cetera, et cetera. Okay? So she has done something. I'll give her credit. Of course, I'm not getting any credit. I understand that. But I think that's a wave that is coming. I believe in the principle. If we've done it in a gradual way, I think that we're asked to... there are other consequences. I'm getting a lot of emails, some hotel and lodging associations, some of the hospitals. You know, still with some questions. And we're doing a lot of amendments, so I know we're going back and making it closer so it's less burdensome. I don't know how I can be a representative of all my constituents and not say I'm affected by what the comptroller says, what family care says, what the market says, and just ignore all that because it's a good cause for a number of people, and I understand that. So I don't expect any sympathy. I don't expect anyone necessarily agree with me, certainly in the audience. But I think those are just considerations that we need to look at, and somebody has to represent the other 85%. And I guess for a while they'll still be me. Thank you.
Thank you, Supervisor. I have three cards.
I just wanted to answer something she said.
Pardon me?
I just wanted to say something.
Go ahead, Supervisor.
You know, Supervisor Jersey, I think you're right. This is a difficult process, but we've also had this chicken and egg thing where in talks, you know, while this was being drafted in December, I had been told, you know, well, the comptroller isn't going to give a fiscal analysis on every particular proposal. So, you know, we get an amendment. They don't necessarily want to do it if it's not real. I mean, if we had 10 different amendments for $11.33, for $13.33, for $10 an hour, I don't think the comptroller wanted to spin his wheels and come up with a fiscal estimate on that. So I think it will be forthcoming. And I guess, you know, for the purpose of this amendment, I mean, this amendment kind of tightens it up a little bit, so those who are not supportive of the concept would probably be supportive of this amendment, I would suspect, but because it's really more of a compromise on Supervisor Bowen's part as we work forward to try to have a meeting of the minds. So that you know, I understand your concern. I share that concern to get – we want real numbers. And I didn't receive this – I got an email saying this amendment was ready, I think, about 3:30 or 4 o'clock on the 28th, the day we were closed. So I didn't – it's not like I've seen it. It's not like I've been carrying it in my hip pocket for the past 3 weeks. You know, there's been discussions and figuring out how to draft it. And, you know, with Act 14, you know, we have less staff here. And I don't think the comptroller is completely – I don't know if they're fully staffed with our research people yet. So there's been those difficulties, too. So, I mean, I do respect where you're coming from, and I respect that you tend to make decisions, you know, based on information, which is good. And so I just wanted to let you know that's why this is here today without some of that information.
Supervisor Jersey?
Thank you. I would like to respond to that, and I appreciate that. I would actually like to see the comptroller's information, so if it helps, I will vote for the amendment so that we can tell the comptroller that, yes, this is something we all want to get information on. I agree we shouldn't be asking him to spin his wheels on something that's not going to pass. So if it'll help, I'll be happy to vote for the amendment so we can get the opinion. And by the way, I'm not asking the comptroller to even make a recommendation one way or another. I don't think that's his job. His job is to give us the numbers. I'll make the decision on how I ultimately vote for this. So just everyone can play their own role, and I appreciate Supervisor Cullen's stating that to me, and I'll be more than willing to help you get an amendment passed so we can get good numbers. If this is what everyone sees as the reasonable amendment, I mean, there might be a lot of other ones out there, and if Supervisor Mayo's going to wait till board day, and I don't know if he's going to get Mr. Mansky to, you know, to evaluate his one proposal. I think he's taking some risk by doing it the way he's doing it. Because we can actually help get these numbers, and I can actually help this committee if that's how we're going to do it. So I'm willing to be a team player. Thank you.
Thank you, Supervisor. I have three cards before we vote on the amendment. Kenneth P. Greening. if he would come forward. Good morning, Ken.
Thank you, County Supervisor Willie Johnson and Luigi Smith. I am a constituent of you. I'm Kenneth P. Greeny, a Milwaukee County retiree plumber. I'm also a board member of 12 years from Voces de la Frontera Workers Center. We're a low-income facility. We need low-income rise up. That's how we rise up the community. That's how we pay all your taxes. We need upgrading of our employees. From 1968, if the minimum wage was raised, the cost of inflation would be well over $10 an hour. So we don't need to really vote on this, and lips and mail would agree with this. We are held behind. We can get a $485 lawyer here, and that's 100%. But our low income, oh my goodness, this is how to raise the community, and that's what we need. Thank you very much.
Thank you, sir. Any supervisors, any questions of Mr. Greeny? Thank you, Ken.
Thank you.
Director Ledger, Director Maria Ledger. And then Director Ken, Don Tyler. Director Ledger.
Good morning, Chairman, County Board Supervisors. The information that I wanted to share with you, some of which I shared with you on a previous board day, and I've had an opportunity to talk with some of the other members of Finance, Audit, and Personnel, but I wanted to make sure that you had all of the information that the Department of Family Care has as you make your decisions. With me is Jim Hodson, our Chief Financial Officer. So I have a copy testimony for you. So some of the information that we put together was in response to questions raised at the previous committee meeting regarding at the time there was some discussion about the size of the household, and so what we went back to do was to look at those supportive home care workers that work for our supportive home care employment service agencies. Because those would be the two or three agencies that would be impacted by this ordinance. So what we were able to do is look at the average number of hours worked by those workers for those agencies. And as you see in front of you, and apologize, I went on the cost-effective side and printed it out in black and white, but I will have a color copy for you for the record. That the majority of the workers that work, again, for those supportive home care employment service agencies are working less than 20 hours per week, just so you have a full picture in terms of what we're talking about. As we have explained in more detail, when the majority of these individuals, 80% of them, are working for a member of their own family. So it's people that are helping their parents, their siblings, their adult children. And when we look at hours, when our care management teams put together a plan, the amount of hours that someone is going to be providing service to someone in their home is going to be based on what that enrolled member needs in order to meet their outcomes. What do they need to be safe and healthy in their own home? So that's the determining factor in terms of hours. Now, there are opportunities for individuals if they would like to work pool, but most people tend to simply want to work with members of their own family, which I'm sure you can appreciate. We also tried to, again, probably more specific to Supervisor Cullen's concern at the previous meeting, to look at when he asked the question in terms of why a family of four. We looked at really the only measure that was available to us, and that was looking at the number of withholding allowances that were claimed by the supportive home care workers for those agencies that with whom we contract. And again, Jimmy, you want to help me with this? I guess what we found was that less than 19% of the home care workers, and this is where this is where the black and white does us something of a disservice, but that less than 19% of all home care workers declared four or more withholding allowances. And again, that is not meant to be a perfect apples-to-apples comparison. It is, however, the information that's available when you look at what a household size is. So, and what we had shared earlier in terms of how certainly Department of Family Care absolutely values the work that these individuals do to keep people in the community, and in recognition of that, we have, as the board has acknowledged, we have been able to provide rate increases to employees for these particular contract agencies. And when we went back and did an analysis, what we found is that, again, these employees for these agencies are reimbursed at about 3% over our provider network average, and at about $1.06 more than the City of Milwaukee living wage ordinance. Now, if you look at the table below, those first three rows are from the Department of Workforce Development. Oh, I'm sorry. It's on page three. I apologize. So those first three rows represents information that I copied from the Department of Workforce Development. The clarification that I need to provide to you is that first row where it says Milwaukee County, what the Department of Workforce Development means is geographically the county, not organizationally the county. So when they look at workers in the, what they classify as personal care attendants, and when I look at the education and training, it matches up with our supportive home care workers. Geographically in Milwaukee County, you see the three entry, average, and experienced pay ranges. In Dane County, you see the same. And then statewide is, again, from the Department of Workforce Development, are all of the other geographic areas. That last row is where the Milwaukee County Department of Family Care is. So as you can see, we're ahead of the pack, certainly in terms of entry level, and where there is a geographic area where there are higher reimbursement rates, it's in Dane County. Now, again, Dane County has a living wage ordinance, but it's important to note that Dane County's ordinance exempts compensation provided to a family member. So, and again, that's 80% of the individuals with whom we're speaking. So the ordinance there, it's not apples to apples with the way that this current ordinance is drafted. So exemptions for reimbursement provided to a family member, and also there is, Dane County doesn't have family care, but they have family care partnership, which is the long-term care benefit with the acute and primary side also included. The managed care organization, the MCO there, is a private organization. It's not a county-run. And so they have been exempt from that particular ordinance. So there isn't, I guess, what I'm trying to demonstrate is when you compare Milwaukee County and Dane County, there's some, I think, substantive differences in terms of the classifications of individuals that are affected by the ordinance. So what we want to make sure, again, that the board has an ample opportunity to consider when you're deliberating on this is the things that we look at, which is, again, as we raised earlier at prior committee meetings, is that, and as you all know from having us up here on an annual basis, our capitation rate for any year is an unknown quantity until it's presented to us. And again, as we reported last cycle, our capitation rate has decreased twice in the past 2 years. And actually, Jim Hodson, do you have that graph? this, we will also make copies, but this particular graph.
Extra copies.
Oh, okay. Do you want to just say real quickly what that represents?
What this represents, this line down below here, is more or less a break even from a funding perspective. So this line shows the years of the funding over the last 10 years, and where the peak is when we expanded to the younger population back in 2009 and 2010. That cost the younger population typically is a little bit more costly, so our rates would have went up. So our funding went up there.
These are the individuals under 60.
Under 60,
correct.
So then most recently you can see down here is the decreases we were receiving in 2012 and in 2014. And I think the concern we have is, in particular, is the annual increase that isn't fully reflected in the comptroller's report right now. There is an increase, but it's not. The increase is on the wage rate, and at 2.5%, at 11.32 or 11.33 an hour, that's about $740,000 a year annually that the program would be subject to each and every year. And we don't have don't necessarily have a guaranteed revenue source that will go up each and every year. So there is some concerns there that there's could be some volatility in our rate structure and our ability to pay.
So I was going to go through with the capitation.
Sure.
Sorry. So again, when we look at the variability and unpredictability of our capitation rate increase. And then again, as we reported, this current year's decrease is going to already necessitate that the MCO make a withdrawal from reserves because of the state's rate decrease. And so, again, as you know, what we also have to consider, and I have some more information a little farther along in the report, is the needs of the remainder of our provider network. We have 1,100 service providers, some of whom we've already begun to have discussions internally about who haven't had rate increases in a timely fashion. So we need to make sure that every provider who provides a service to an older adult or a younger person with a disability is able to do so and has sufficient revenue on their own to be able to provide good services. So that's our other concern, again, with the variability in the capitation rate. We're also, we've talked about the potential impact of any state or federal policy changes. The full financial implication of the Affordable Care Act is at this point unknown to us. We have initial estimates, but again, not only for the Supportive Home Care Employment Services, but really every provider agency with whom we contract is going to have that discussion internally about whether they have full-time employees, whether they do not, whether they will be providing health insurance or whether they will not. And as we pay for services, if a provider's cost to hire and retain and maintain quality staff increase, that's a cost that's passed along to us, the way that rate increases are. So it's a dollar amount that we have to be very concerned about, again, that we're going to be able to make sure that all of the service providers within the network are adequately reimbursed. And we have, I was at a meeting in Madison and heard very plainly that the State Department of Health Services will not be adjusting the capitation rate of any managed care organization in recognition of the Affordable Care Act. So that's just something that we will have to work out, each MCO on its own. So we also, and we talked again a little bit about this at the previous committee, that Department of Health Services has the authority to determine that when any MCO provides a rate increase to a provider, if it is what they consider to be too high, too steep of a jump, they have the ability and have done so in the past, have discounted the amount of that increase. In 2009, we gave rate increases, again, because we identified providers who needed them, who hadn't had a rate increase in quite some time. We were trying to bring everybody to a point where they needed to be. The state made a determination that that was too steep of a jump. And so, as we've discussed on other occasions, part of what goes into our rate-setting process is the state looks back 2 years and sees what our expenditures were. In this instance, from 2009 to 2012, when they looked at those expenditures, they discounted that rate increase when setting future rates. And we were successful in having them no longer do that in 2012, but that took quite a bit of effort on our part. That happened to this MCO and to another, to Lakeland Care District. So, and again, I provided a list, and I believe this is the same list that you had earlier. I wanted you to see on the second to the last page all of the other services that are within the network, just so that sort of a graphic representation of the other elements that go into the family care benefit package. Each of these categories has multiple providers, which is why we have 1,100 providers in the network. And we have to be fair, and we have to be very conscious of the fact that we want to make sure that everybody is receiving sufficient revenue to do the job that at the quality level that we expect of them. So, and lastly, if you look at the very last page, what we have again already begun doing is trying to figure out a way that we can build a career ladder for staff. My chief clinical officer and our business specialist have had some conversations with the Alzheimer's Association about what would it mean to be able to provide dementia care classes for our supportive home care employment staff so that they would be able to be certified as dementia care specialists. Given that the majority of the individuals who receive this service are older adults, and given the urgency, certainly statewide, in terms of serving people with Alzheimer's and related dementias, I think having a workforce that has a certification as a dementia care specialist is going to mean that our members receive a higher level service, and it also provides something I think very tangible for employees to move on perhaps to other areas and continue to build a career ladder. We are also in the beginning stages of looking at how we may be able to offer scholarships for staff to attend CNA classes. Again, a CNA licensure would allow you to go work at any number of places. It's going to allow greater mobility and, again, a career ladder. And we also want to look at the option of is there a way that we can look at reimbursement for travel expenses for individuals. So I think coupled with the increases that we've been able to give because we've been able to really do our due diligence from a fiscal standpoint and make decisions about what we can and can't do, we have been fortunate that we have been able to, and I think we all feel pretty good about the fact that we have been able to provide a steady stream of rate increases. But I think the important thing for the board to note is we've done that because it's been necessary. It's critical, but we've also been very judicious in it and have done it because we have been fiscally able to. So, and the other thing I just wanted to clarify for Supervisor Cullen, just so we're clear in the email that I sent you, what I sent was sort of per your request, the potential financial impact of looking at a different dollar amount. So, and that's, you know, that, and I, as I said in the email, that's an estimate of a financial impact as to actual cost, but it's going to differ based upon hours of service worked and members served. So that was information that you requested that I passed along.
Thank you, Director. Supervisors Jurczyk and Lipscomb.
Thank you. I know this is all very complicated, and when you change one number somewhere, it changes things differently on your graphs and so on. But in listening to you, if I could just perhaps ask the question a little differently to see if I understood what you said.
Okay.
That 19% figure that you gave us, mm-hmm. Would it be correct for me to say that less than 19% of home health care workers remain within the contracted definition of under the living wage?
Yes.
Less than 19%. Is that what you were telling me?
Mr. Chair, Supervisor Jurczyk,
tell me that 19% again.
I will. What the 19% represents was our best attempt at providing information to the board about the size of a household. So it isn't perfect because as anyone who's filled out a tax form knows, you are not required to put down the exact amount in your household. But this is the information that was available to us in a de-identified manner so that we could look at giving you more information about the best way we could come at what potential the size of the household is.
Right. This goes to the family of four issue.
Precisely.
All right. the comptroller gave us a number last time we talked about this, at about 8,000 folks are being impacted by the living wage with regard to contracted workers from Waukee County. Mm-hmm. If we start taking some folks out because of the changes, that's also going to, I assume, change the 8,000 number. Do you follow what I'm saying on this?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, Supervisor Jurisic, yes, but I don't know that, it just in the quick two-minute review I had of the amendment, that there are people coming out. I know what the number is of the potential individuals impacted within the Department of Family Care, but so I haven't seen any exemption that would impact upon this my department.
Had you seen the amendment before today?
No, ma'am.
So you can't really take the amendment and see how this might change for the family care scenario. And I have to tell you, some of the phone calls I was getting are from the folks that are employers within my district that, you know, run the CBDGs and some of these facilities. And you talk about the state of Wisconsin, for example, is not putting the Affordable Care Act into its capitation rate. That's a double whammy for folks, because those employers who fit under the definition of the Affordable Care Act, and I believe it's 50, so those who employ more than 50 folks, and a lot of the CBDG owners own more than one facility, mm-hmm. and since they do 24-hour shifts, they, in fact, do get more than 50 employees. So they are subject to the Affordable Care Act, which means that they have to provide health care under the new Affordable Care Act. But because of the state of Wisconsin not adopting the Affordable Care Act, they're not going to get it in the capitation rate, which is a double whammy to folks. And on top of that, we're proposing putting this living wage ordinance on them. And I'm really getting folks saying to me, I can't exist as a business. Mm-hmm. So those are the realities of the decision we're going to make here. Mm-hmm. And it very much concerns me, because these are good people. Mm-hmm. These are people truly trying to provide services to the residents that are in their homes.
Absolutely.
And in their some of these people are, in fact, religious, who mm-hmm. very much care about all of these issues.
Mm-hmm.
And they're being backed into a corner where they really can't live through all of these requirements, pulling them both ways, the political scene mm-hmm. in Madison again. So that's one thing that very much concerns me. I would like to hope that if the amendment gets passed today, you will work with Mr. Mansky on all of these numbers, because really the family care one concerns me very much, and I'm going to call it the double whammy that those mm-hmm. employers are getting, where they're not going to get it in the capitation rate because of the state of Wisconsin, and yet they are going to be forced to do it because of definitions under Affordable Care Act, and we're going to, on top of that, put living wage,
mm-hmm.
but doesn't affect everyone, just a small number of employees. So I do hope folks are paying attention to this, because the reality of this is it's going to be unworkable for those employers.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Chair, Supervisor Jurisic, yeah, absolutely. We share your concerns. There's a lot of every year there's variability and volatility in terms of expectations from the state to all of the managed care organizations. Sometimes we have a bit of lead time in terms of looking at new requirements. Sometimes we don't. So that's our concern as well.
Yeah, and, you know, I mean, the last thing we want to do is drive people out of business so there are less jobs out there.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the unintended consequence sometimes of doing these things.
Mm-hmm.
So thank you. I'll stop there.
Thank you, Supervisor. Supervisor Lipscomb.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just to start with, let me probe something that seems to be coming up repeatedly. So Supervisor Schmidt referenced contacts he's had, hospitals and hotels. Supervisor Jurisic just talked about, I believe you're talking about CBRFs.
I think I'm talking about anyone who has employees that are over, once you're over 50. Mm-hmm.
So I've had a number of those contacts, but they're generally not covered by the ordinance. I mean, they seem to be, they're contacting you because they think they are, but they're not. And so I think you got to discount some of those contacts you get. Mm-hmm. If someone calls you and they're uninformed, that's part of the job, is that you have to help them understand it. And they're not covered by that ordinance. We're talking about the what's the acronym? Supportive home care. Mm-hmm. So that's the number that we're talking about.
Mr. Chair, Supervisor,
your other vendors in those scenarios are not covered. They're not in your two preferred provider networks, right?
Supervisor Lipscomb, correct. The ordinance, as originally drafted, talks specifically about the supportive home care workers for the supportive home care employment services. If I may, I believe to Supervisor Jurisdick's point, what the other members of our provider network are subject to would be a financial impact from the Affordable Care Act. And so that's something that the managed care organization has to be able to a need that we have to be able to meet for all of the members of our provider network, regardless of whether they are as well impacted by the living wage ordinance.
So I guess that brings me to one of my other points. So it's not because of this ordinance that they're mm-hmm. already, that dynamic already exists in terms of the Affordable Care Act is the law. They're going to have to deal with that. There's nothing about this that's creating that or exacerbating that. It's independent of. I understand. It's you have two. They'll have two challenges to deal with. But isn't that why one of the provisions is that the exemption under union contracts? So, if the union contract would specifically acknowledge the exemption, I mean, one of the things that people get to negotiate for would be in lieu of wages, I want health care, or I want tuition reimbursement that you talked about. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, that is one of the provisions, and that's one of the ways to deal with it.
Supervisor Lipscomb, I'm grabbing my copy of the resolution somewhere in the pile of resolutions. I believe the section to which you were referring. You see it? No. Sorry, I don't have the version with the numbered lines on it. So, here, this one. Sorry. Right, Supervisor Lipscomb. I believe the section to which you're referring is the requirements of this section may be modified or waived as regard employees who are covered by a collective bargaining agreement between the employer and a bona fide union where the parties to such collective bargaining agreement expressly specify their intent in the agreement. So my interpretation of that, and it's a non-legal one, is that if the agency and the union agree to waive this section jointly, then that is an exemption. That's not an automatic exemption for agencies that are covered by a collective bargaining agreement. That's my interpretation. No law school.
No,
that's my interpretation. It's not a legal one. It's just so we're clear about my level of expertise in the legal arena.
Well, I can't offer a legal interpretation either. So, but I guess I offer that mm-hmm. up. That's the mechanism to deal with that. Some of that challenge is that. Mm-hmm. I mean, everyone we're talking about is covered by, I believe, that the two preferred mm-hmm. providers are both covered by collective bargaining agreements. So when the next agreement, before the next agreement goes into effect, before this takes effect, they should be working to negotiate those items. So if it's health care people want, if it's tuition reimbursement that they want, or if it's wages that they want, that's the negotiation that you undertake. Can we talk a little bit, though, about this the chart about the wages? When we look at average wage and Milwaukee County, the MCO, paying, what's that, 60 cents or something above, 56 cents above the Milwaukee County average, but still $1.45 under the Dane County average. And then there's a little more compression in the experience category, but just using the average category. And yet, in the narrative, you talk about how they're effectively exempted from it, both because of the 80% of workers who work for family, but also because of the exemption in the ordinance on the 501c3. So despite being exempted from the Dane County ordinance, they still have an average rate $1.45 above our existing average and 50 some cents above the proposed rate. So how does the dynamic work for them that they don't seem to be getting their number tossed out by the department?
Mr. Chair, Supervisor Lipscomb, the 80% of the supportive home care workers who work for a member of their family is what we find to be true for Milwaukee County. So one can assume that it would be the same. I think the reason the difference is that Dane County, as I said, doesn't have family care the way the rest of the state that participates in managed care has it. Dane County has family care partnerships, so it's that long-term care benefit with the acute and primary piece. They don't have family care the way that we do here. There are still, and I don't have the number, there are still a large number of individuals who are served under the Medicaid waivers, the long-term support delivery system. KIPP and CUP. The community integration program and the community actions program, those were the vehicles for delivering long-term care services throughout the state prior to family care. So if you take out the individuals who work for a member of their family, and you take out those individuals that are enrolled in family care partnership, what you end up with are people who are receiving services through their Medicaid card, through fee-for-service from a licensed home health agency, or through those Medicaid waivers. And so it's a different, again, and the reason I pointed it out in the narrative, it's a different long-term support delivery system than really much of the rest of the state, because it isn't family care. But so what they're measuring here are people who I can only assume, and I don't know because this is a Department of Workforce Development statistic, but through fee-for-service or through those Medicaid waivers, not through, so it's county funding. It's different that, you know, if there's still tax levy going into services along with the Medicaid waivers, it's county funding. It doesn't impact on the MCO that's there that functions the way that we do. Okay. Again, because they're a private entity, they're not subject to this, and because there's that larger exemption. So it's just, it's not a perfect comparison when you look at Milwaukee and Dane. It's not a perfect comparison between Milwaukee and Dane for any number of reasons, but that would be one of them.
Okay. Well, unfortunately, it's the comparison you give me. So.
Oh, I know. I understand. But my point was simply there's lots of other ways that Milwaukee County is different than Dane County.
Okay. All right. I guess I'll accept that. All right. I appreciate that. On the amendment then, so not for the department, on the amendment, So economic development assistance is still in, just not with respect to land sales. Is that my understanding? And then the phase out is out for everything, not just for land sales, right?
So
there's no phase out in any category. Or no phase in any category. It's the phase in is when your next contract goes into effect.
Mr. Chair, Supervisor Lipscomb, that is correct.
Thank you.
Any other comments, questions? Director Ledger and Ms. Johnson. Supervisors Bowen and Cullen.
Supervisor, thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll yield to Supervisor Cullen.
Supervisor Cullen.
Well, I don't know that I have a question as much as a comment. I mean, I appreciate all the work that you two have put into this. I met with them a couple weeks ago to try to see if there are ways to handle this, and I thought that maybe someone else was working on this issue. I know that Supervisor Stamper had in the past been working on this issue. And when I met with them, I asked them, do you have any suggestions of what we can do to sort of ease the pain on family care? And maybe you can come up with some suggested amendments. And because I don't know what all the effect would be if we did X or Y. For instance, if we did like Dane County did, if we exempted people working for their families, things like that. And to date, I haven't gotten any suggestions from them as to how to do this. So it's a little bit of a frustration on my part. I mean, I view them as the experts in their financial picture, and I do think that from, you know, they haven't seen the amendment. Basically, the email that was sent to me, I mean, I asked Ms. Ledger in the phone conversation to say, well, if we went to 11:32 or 11:33 an hour, what would that mean? And she did respond to that, which was helpful. So I don't know that, you know, that she needs to see the amendment anymore for her purposes for that. I think we can get that information from her. She probably has that. I can't put my fingers right on that email.
Thank you, Supervisor. Supervisor Bowen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I want to thank Ms. Ledger and the administration for meeting with me yesterday. We had a lengthy conversation, and I kept them too late in the office as well, and
this
got them
much.
Locked out of their office, so my apologies for that. But I will mention family care is under a lot of pressure from the state and from the administration to be against this policy. I do know there is a lot of misinformation with providers or companies that might think that they're impacted by this legislation, but the truth is when it comes to the impact on family care, there are two main providers that the SHUCIs, as they call them, the supportive home care workers, employees that work for those providers and would be impacted by the legislation. And this is also the reason why we created the work group, which will be coordinated by the Department of Audit for the Living Wage Ordinance, so that we could look at all those angles. And they also have the opportunity to make make recommendations to this board. That is included in the legislation. And there was another point I wanted to make.
You said two. Supportive home care workers and?
No, the type of employees in family care are supportive home care workers, and they work for mainly two agencies and a very small agency as well.
Correct.
There's two main ones and a third. But we were very careful to make sure that we were targeting a group of employees that was feasible for us to make these impacts on. Again, the risk is lower. The numbers will be calculated, and even in the Comptroller's report, if you read the caveat section on the impact, they mention, you know, this is a fiscal shot of what could be, but it's not definite. So even those numbers could be a lot more minimal than are presented. So it's more so of a range of numbers that you're seeing in front of you, not definite in those numbers. So I just wanted to make sure that was clear. And then you also have a lot of state bills that are being circulated at the same time. I truly think that there is an effort to destroy county government and to continue to diminish the role of Milwaukee County. And I do not think it's our jobs to legislate based on Madison politics and how Milwaukee County is perceived, misperceived by those in Madison who think that they can better legislate or know better for Milwaukee County than we do. We represent the residents of this community, and I think that we need to step up to do that. I do. I feel for the family care program, but I believe this is a doable step. And again, I think the numbers will that you'll see you'll be more pleased with. But again, they are not definite. They can be a lot more minimal than was presented. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Supervisor. Thank you very much for your Supervisor Stanford.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Ledger, in the ordinance under the excluded employees, numbers 10 and 11, say, you know, that certain employees are excluded. Can you look at that real quick and see how that how that affects family care?
Absolutely.
So on third to last page of the ordinance.
Could you give us the line number?
Let me see here.
Under
number 259. I'll just read it. How about that? Employees of contractors, subcontractors, or recipient of financial assistance who provide residential services such as community-based residential facilities, adult family homes, residential community apartment complexes, and supportive and independent living. That's number 10. And then number 11 is employees of a member who receive personal care and supportive home care through a self-directed service program model in Milwaukee County. I know that's Iris, but...
Mr. Chair, Supervisor Stamper, there are individuals who self-direct within family care. Mm-hmm. Iris is a state-managed self-directed supports waiver, so would not be subject to this particular ordinance at all. So the other exclusions to which you're referring are to, individuals who work who provide services in residential settings. So those are the exclusions to which you're referring. And what was your question?
No, I was just saying, in relation to what we're talking about now, with these exclusions, how is family care affected?
Mr. Chair, Supervisor Stamper, I believe those exclusions were in the first iteration.
Okay.
Of the resolution as well. So that the analysis that we have completed and believe that the comptroller has completed never included those. So I don't know. That wouldn't represent a change.
No change. Okay. Right. All right. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Supervisor. Supervisor Jerzyk?
Just one follow-up to one of my colleagues' questions. You read the exclusions that are being talked about here in the resolution, and the statement was made that under family care, the only type of workers that then would be included were supportive home care workers. Do you agree with that? Is that correct? Or... I mean, I look at lines 252, that whole provision, employees of a contractor, subcontractor, concessionaire, or recipient of financial assistance otherwise covered under this chapter, where the employer otherwise subject to the provisions of this chapter employs no more than 20 employees, and where the employer otherwise subject to the provisions of this chapter is not an affiliate or subsidiary of another business entity domain in its field of operation.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not even sure I know what that means after I get done reading the sentence.
Thank you.
But do you know of any situation where someone under the family care program would be included that's not a supportive home care worker?
Right.
I think that's what colleague Stamper was getting at.
All right, I apologize.
So I'm asking if you've read through these exclusions.
Correct.
And do you agree with the statement that only supportive home care workers are included?
Mr. Chair, Supervisor Jerzyk, that's my interpretation, that this is the group of individuals of which we're speaking, those supportive home care workers. I don't pretend to understand all of the language. any better than you, but that's my understanding, is that when we talk about the impact to the Department of Family Care of this proposed ordinance, that it is that group of employees, those supportive home care, employees that work for the SHUCIs, the Supportive Home Care Employment Services.
And as far as the number, I mean, I guess I'll wait and get the numbers from the financial statement. I'm not gonna see what the numbers are. I need our experts to tell me what the numbers are. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Supervisor Stanford, then we'll go to the next person to testify. Go ahead, Supervisor.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, what about numbers? Do you know how many employees will be affected versus won't in considering these exclusions?
Mr. Chair, Supervisor Stamper, again, I don't think
number of bodies.
Right. I don't think that number has changed.
Okay.
I don't know that anything is different in the resolution as it was drafted, unless I'm mistaken. The amendment is new, but I don't know that the amendment changes the initial number that we provided and from which the comptroller was working.
All right, I'll check it out. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Supervisor Bowen, then we'll go to the next individual. Supervisor Bowen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I just wanted to clarify, if you look at the amount of providers that are in the family care network, which is how many?
Mr. Chair, Supervisor Bowen, approximately 1,100.
1,100 providers, right, that are providing services, day treatment centers.
Residential services, day services, durable medical equipment, transportation, home-delivered meals.
Right.
I could go on.
So we're talking about thousands of people that work for those providers.
Correct.
Right? And then the amount of people that are in our family care program in Milwaukee County.
8,200. That's 8,200.
Right. So 8,200 people that are in the family care program.
Correct.
So we're taking a very specific section of family care workers that are working directly with people in the family care program, right?
Absolutely.
And imposing this wage change, this wage increase on those workers. And I want to clarify that for the exemptions. But then also to be very clear on Supervisor Lipscomb's points, that if those employees are represented, and I believe all of the supportive home care workers for the two major providers are represented by a union, correct?
Mr. Chair, Supervisor Bowen, I believe that SEIU represents employees of both the two larger Supportive Home Care Employment Services, SHO and NHS. I can't speak to whether every Supportive Home Care employee of those agencies has elected to be a part of the union. I don't know. I don't have that information. But I know that there are represented employees there.
Right, and they are represented. That's a majority of that 2,400 number of employees. And the numbers that we have in the fiscal analysis represents increasing the wages on all those employees, and then we end up with those numbers.
Mm-hmm.
But like Supervisor Lipscomb is saying, if those individuals are represented, now it would depend on, like you said, if both parties recognize that collective bargaining agreement.
That's my interpretation.
So I just want to be very clear on the exemptions in here, so supervisors can see how this works clearly, and that the numbers in the fiscal analysis that we're seeing, they could defer. It could be different.
Mr. Chair, Supervisor Bowen, if both parties, if the union and the agency came to a separate agreement, that would change things. I think the other clarifying piece of information which might be helpful is, I'm going to ask Mr. Hodson to do computation and send on the fly, how many hours of service do you remember?
That was over 2.2 million hours.
So, when again, we're talking about three agencies, two, as you said, are larger, with one is smaller. And it's a small percentage of, again, out of 1,100 providers. But if it's 2.2 million service hours, that's, you know, and again, that number will change depending upon members enrolling, receiving the services, and so on. But it's a large number of service hours that are provided.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much for your testimony. Don Tyler, Director of Administrative Services for Milwaukee County.
Carry the water. There we go.
Okay.
This is the hot one.
Good morning, Director Tyler.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and Supervisors. Thanks so much for the opportunity to visit with you this morning about this particular topic. I think in the last cycle, you had heard from my Director of Economic Development regarding the impact on economic development in Milwaukee County. I'm going to defer to the testimony that Teague provided you last cycle. He might want to add something beyond that once he gets his arms around the revised resolution. My focus this morning will really be twofold. Since I head up administrative services, part of my responsibility is the fiscal side of the county and also the practical operations, if you will, on contracting and abiding by ordinances. So my focus will be on those two components, the cost of the ordinance and the practical operational aspects of the implementation of the ordinance. So first, let's talk about the cost. First, I think our comptroller adequately addressed the nearly $9 million cost annually that we'll have to find a way to cover. Now, I'm not sure what the impact is going to be with the resolution, the change. It probably won't be nearly $9 million, but let's say it's six. Who knows what it is, but it's substantial. I think the fact that he did do a comprehensive job, the fact is that I fear, and many would too, I'm sure you would, and I think it's even been suggested here by Supervisor Bowen, that it's not likely to be what in fact is projected by the comptroller. Could be less, could be more. Quite frankly, when it comes to projections, projections usually end up coming up lower and the costs end up being higher. And I think even in the family care testimony, they had expressed some concerns that perhaps the comptroller's calculations did not fully cover the economic implications of the ordinance. So I also recognize that a portion of this nearly $9 million may be absorbed through the family care reserve fund, as highlighted by the comptroller's fiscal note. But, you know, when you think about it, and I think Supervisor Schmidt referred back in the Milwaukee Public Museum testimony earlier this morning about the pickle that the museum got into when they tapped into a reserve, because when you tap into a reserve, it's not sustainable. So you might be able to cover the deficit for a short period of time, but at some point you're going to have to pay the price. And I think you all know what happened with the Milwaukee Public Museum when they chose to do that. We also question whether this is the right time for us to layer on these additional costs at a time where we are still projecting annual deficits in the years out exceeding nearly $80 million a year. And this speaks to Supervisor Jurczyk's concern that the fact is that we are still in a fiscal crisis, and layering on these additional costs at a time where we're still trying to get out of this financial crisis and get to sustainability, I wonder whether this is the right time to do that. You know, perhaps if we were in a healthier position, we'd consider this as a bold initiative. But the fact is that we remain in a financial crisis, and people have to remember that. And layering on nearly $9 billion a year to our annual deficit, in my view, would be incomprehensible and probably not a good decision on the board's part. So that's my observation from a cost perspective. What I'd like to do is talk about the operational side. So my team is responsible for making sure that we're executing on the various ordinances that the board approves, particularly as it relates to contracting and purchasing. Our job is to help the board pass ordinances that work. And one of the things that we have a concern about in this particular resolution is the practical execution of it. And we would love to have the opportunity to work with the authors of this resolution to make sure that if you do go forward on this, that, in fact, it's something that we can execute. There's a couple things that I want to just highlight with you. For instance, the annual renewals, and I think Supervisor Bowen said the new resolution actually states that the renewals are effective immediately. And we're not sure what the definition of that is. So if we have a three-year contract that expires on March 31st, 2014 with a one-year renewal, and does that mean that that contract is now eligible or is required to abide by the new resolution in terms of paying the minimum wage? If a vendor is in a situation on that one-year renewal having to pay on that minimum wage, do they have the opportunity to renegotiate that contract because what we're doing is layering on additional costs to them? They probably have two options. They can either terminate the contract or they can try to absorb the additional cost. You know that many of the contracts that we have are people intensive, so the additional cost will be significant to our small business providers. And will make it complicated for them to continue on if the renewal is as early as next month. We also fear that the workload ahead of both the county and our vendors relative to the reporting and audit requirements. In all due respect to the auditor's projection, what the ordinance requires is a relative onerous and bureaucratic reporting by the vendors, and in fact may discourage more good contractors from working with the county. For sure, this ordinance layers on considerable effort on our part of not only tracking, monitoring, and compliance. And this is the important one, is compliance. How are we going to track compliance? It's going to be something that is extremely difficult and very expensive to do. We barely have the ability to track and enforce residency and DBE requirements today. So adding the complex layer that will make it extremely challenging for us and potential companies wanting to do business with the county. Another major concern we have is relative to the disparity in a vendor's standing. The living wage exemption for union shops feels a little counterintuitive. Unions not having to pay employees a living wage. Since the union shops will not have to comply, while non-union shops will, there'll be a huge disparity in the bidding process. We wonder what consequences of this will be in the bidding process, the complexity of the appeal process, and perhaps the potential for legal action. This is important for, I think, the people in the back to understand that the living wage does not necessarily include those individuals that are union employees. They have an exemption. Another major concern on how the ordinance will create a disparity between bidders is between the incumbent and the potential proposer or potential winner of the new contract. The ordinance mandates that the new firm hire the employees of the old firm for at least 90 days. Now, let me ask you this. Why would a firm who's bidding on this business, knowing they are required to hire staff they know nothing about, why would they actually bid on that business knowing that they're going to have to hire people from the previous incumbent? How would they bake that into the cost of the contract? The incumbent firm would have a huge competitive advantage during the bidding process. Requiring a new firm to hire an old firm staff expands this ordinance well beyond the living wage ordinance, and it would be quite a challenge for the county to ensure compliance of that.
Excuse me, Director. How much further do you have to go? And this is the reason I'm asking. This is the reason I'm asking. We had a lot of testimony from the public last time, and with due respect to concerns about family care, a lot of questions were asked. So I'm asking, the reason I'm asking is not to be embarrassing or anything like that, but I don't want to be here I don't want to be here 3 hours working on dealing with this when we've got a lot of agenda to deliberate on. So my question is, how much longer, in the sense that can copies be made of your testimony and to be distributed to the committee members?
Mr. Chair, I've got copies, and I've got about 2 more minutes.
Okay, go ahead.
These are important concerns in terms of the practical application of it.
We'll have a couple more testify. And again, last time, a good number of the public did testify.
Right.
And I just don't want to go another 3 hours or so on this.
Thank you. I understand, Mr. Chair, and I think that all I want to stress is administration is as boring as hell. I'll give you that. But the practical execution of this ordinance is critical for the county to be able to pull off. So I just want to highlight some of the others, and then we'll be on our way.
Thank you very much.
You know, we're also confused about the $20,000 contract exemption. The resolution isn't clear in terms of what the total amount for the full term of the contract, including renewals, or is it an annual amount? If it's an annual amount, what happens if in 1 year it's $19,000 and in subsequent years it's $22,000? Is it still exempt or not? So we're trying to get clarity on that. And regarding the $20,000 exemption, we also wonder whether this is in conflict with the fact that the board does not make policy for contracting under $100,000. So we've not received a definitive answer from court counsel on this, and I think it's something that would be considered for you to take a look at. Finally, we're very concerned about the creativity and innovation of the county staff to get around this ordinance through the exemption of the professional services contract. This is a huge loophole that you can bet departments will leverage.
Excuse me for a
minute. Mr. Tyler, on your last comment, I mean, I assume you're referring to Act 14, and I don't have Act 14 in front of me, but as I remember Act 14, it says we do not vote on contracts under $100,000. I don't think, did it say something about making policy in Act 14 because on contracts? I think the language is voting on it.
Yeah. Mr. Chair, I'm just, and supervisors, I'm just giving an observation that we're trying to understand.
Raise red herring.
Yeah, that we're trying to understand. Finally, this leads to my final comment. Again, we already have major challenges trying to execute contradictory, conflicting, and poorly written ordinances. We are in the process of cleaning those up, and you know that. So we can be, in fact, legal and compliant. Adding an additional layer of complexity is not only costing us an additional nearly $9 million a year, but it's going to be all but impossible to fold into an already convoluted set of ordinances that we are challenged to be in compliance of. So our suggestion, and I'm just speaking for my group, is to lay this over, and I know people don't want to do that, but the purpose of the layover would simply be to make sure that the resolution/ordinance is written in a way where my divisions can execute on this appropriately. Thank you for the opportunity.
And if you would distribute the copies of the testimony, appreciate that. Thank you very much, sir. Jennifer F. Sadison. Yes.
When can we call a question?
Again, with respect to deliberations, we don't want to go for a long time, so I hope that you're judicious.
Be brief, Mr. Chair, is your word.
Thank you very much, ma'am.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, members of the board. My name is Jennifer Epps-Addison. I'm the executive director at Wisconsin Jobs Now. We are also a member of the more than 40 organizations who have joined in support of the workers who would be affected by living wage. I want to start just by thanking those workers. Many of them are here today, low-wage workers from throughout this community who provide vital services, who keep our economy running and keep our county in good shape, and yet throughout the day-to-day have been incredibly disrespected. So I want to thank them for their bravery. When they stand up and demand more, it not only benefits their families, but it benefits everyone. So thank you. I have a couple of brief points that I'd like to make. First and foremost, I want to talk about this work. The disrespectful language that has been used to describe the workers who provide these services has got to end. These are not entry-level jobs. Let me be clear about this. The people who face being physically harmed as a result of their employment, like Kevin Walker, that is not an entry-level job. That is a job where he puts his life on the line every day to serve this county, and he should be respected for it. The people who take care of our family members with Alzheimer's, with dementia, with some of the most debilitating disabilities that we have, those are not entry-level jobs. If anybody has tried to provide that care for their own family, you know very, very well why we need dedicated professionals doing those services. Today we are at a historic moment in our country. We are at a moment where we get to decide the future not only of our county, but of this nation. Today we decide if the values we hold dearest as Wisconsinites, security, opportunity, responsibility, we decide if those values are real or if they're just rhetoric and speeches that allow our elected officials to pass the buck and get away with helping to perpetuate a system of poverty in this country. As the Pope said recently, it is vital for every elected official to take heed to ensure that all work in this country and in this world has dignity. Today we decide if those values are reality. Now, there has been so much misinformation, and I know I only have a brief time, that I'm going to try to hit the top lines. So first and foremost, I think it's prudent to say that it is a bit disturbing that the people who are going to be responsible for implementing this ordinance came up with a bunch of red herrings, as Supervisor Collin called them. That is very disturbing to the community, and I ask that the board consider making sure there are community voices, worker voices, in the implementation of this ordinance. Let's just talk about family care for a second. First and foremost, let's talk about who's working family care jobs. They came up to you with a lot of charts and graphs. I wish they would have came up to you with one really important one, the one that shows the exponential rate of growth in this home health care industry. Make no mistake about it, there are people profiting off of home health care in our community. It is becoming one of the largest sectors of industry and one of the fastest growing sectors here in the state of Wisconsin. We are not only making a determination for the future of these workers today, but for the future of the home health care industry in the state in the future. And we need to make a strong declaration that we value these services. Family care exists not because we have the goodness of our heart, but because it saves our county money to keep people in their homes and to provide services in those homes. And why family members? To discredit people who are taking these jobs and taking care of their loved ones and saying, well, they're just caring for their family, it's not a real job, that is disgusting. Yes, it is a real job, and they're caring for their family members. And you know what? When they're done with their allotted hours, they don't go home and say, I'm done for today. They stay. They stay whether it's a family member or someone in our community that they're caring for to make sure the job is done.
Excuse me for a minute. I would appreciate it if the clapping would stop. And I understand that this is very important to you, that you're very emotional about what's happening. I understand that. But just to have some decorum, I mean, I'm one of the co-sponsors of this, and I just want to keep order. I just want to keep things down. So I appreciate the concern, and just letting you know that this is the way it should be done. Thank you very much for your
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Sure. I will be summarizing soon. Just to be clear about who it is we're talking about here, we talked a lot about family care. What you haven't heard anybody talk about is the multi-billion-dollar and million-dollar corporations that, by and large, will be affected by this ordinance. Make no mistake about it. Take our airport, for instance. There are companies there that are not only in the millions in profits, but actually in the billions. These companies are used to doing whatever is required in the municipality that they are in. These are multinational companies. They have airport locations and airports all throughout this country. Many of those airports, in fact, have living wage ordinances attached to them. They know how to comply with this law when it is in place. I want to respond quickly to the comptroller because the previous testimony said we weren't sure who was saying that it isn't likely to reach the level of the comptroller's report. The person who said that was the comptroller. In his report, he specifically stated that this is a worst-case scenario. If his report were to ever come to fruition, which I will tell you it is likely not going to, it would be out of line and would be the one exception in over 140 other ordinances that have been put in place. The reality is that the research behind the living wage ordinances, and there is a plethora of it we've provided to nearly every member, actually to every member of the county board, shows that it improves worker retention, it improves the dynamic of care and service, and that it raises budgets by less than 0.1% while raising families, thousands of families, out of poverty. This is not just a good policy for workers. It is a policy that is going to inject next year $38 million worth of increased wages into the Milwaukee County economy. So if you even take the worst-case scenario and you're telling me it's going to cost $6 million to inject $38 million, according to the Center on Wisconsin Strategy, into the economy, well, that's a deal and a rate of return I'm willing to take.
Right.
And that's not even to talk about the hundreds of millions we'll save when we finally pay workers a fair and decent wage so that they can work and not have to rely on public assistance. So I will end with this. It was asked, is this the right time? Is this the right time for us to consider this ordinance? I would ask, when is the right time to help lift our families out of poverty? Was it in the 20s, at the height of Wall Street's decadence? Was it during the Great Depression, when we invested in people and communities and built this county up? Was it in the 60s and 70s, when turmoil and war was raging this country? Was it in the 80s when stockbrokers got rich and everybody lost everything? Was it in 2006 when 2008 when Wall Street stole the pensions of this country, stole work from under people, stole people's homes, put our country on the brink of a Great Depression? Or is it now? Is it now when the profits of CEOs and corporations have never, ever in the history of this nation been higher? Is it now when the stock market has reached record highs? Is it now when the majority of the wealth that has been created in this country since the Great Recession has gone to the hands of the 1%? I argue that the time is now to stop the rhetoric and to start the work. County Supervisor David Bowen is not only leading this county for the state, he led the president on Tuesday. President Barack Obama has proposed for federal contracted workers exactly what David Bowen proposed 6 months ago to this county. We have had discussions about amendments. I know for a fact that that gentleman over there has asked every single one of you to tell him and to tell the community what it takes to get you to support the low-wage workers in this community, because rhetoric is not enough. We are doing this for Deidre, who's an airport worker. When she met with County Executive Chris Abley, she said the only thing she wants to do when she gets home is be able to have a bathtub so she can soak her feet. She stands on her feet all day. That is not an unreasonable request from somebody who works hard in our community. You've heard from Kevin, who said all he wants to be able to do is know what time he's getting off every night and to be able to take care of his kids. That is not an unreasonable request for a job created with public money. I've heard a lot of we can't. We can't do this. We can't enforce it. We can't figure it out. I was not raised in this county to believe it was a county of we can't. I was taught by my parents and by my grandparents that this is the county of we can. It's the county with great public parks for everybody. It's the county that invests in public transportation. It's the place that invests in great public schools. We can, we must, we will pass living wage now. Thank you.
Ms. Colvin, Bruce.
Mr. Chairman.
Supervisor Coleman.
Before Mr. Colburn starts, I appreciate everybody's passion on this. I have a hunch that nobody's changing any minds now. I would call the question on the amendment.
Supervisor Coleman calls the question on the amendment. Madam Clerk, please call the roll on the amendment.
On amendment number one to item four, Supervisors Haas.
Aye.
Schmidt. Rommel West?
Aye.
Jurczyk?
Aye.
Lipscomb?
Aye.
Bowen?
Aye.
Stamper?
Aye.
Cullen?
Aye.
Aye.
Mr. Chair?
Aye.
8 ayes, 1 no. The motion to recommend adoption of Amendment 1 to Item 4 prevails.
Thank you very much. Mr. Colbert.
Mr. Chairman?
Yeah, I don't think anything more needs to be said. I just ask the chair if it's all right if the people clap for me since I didn't get to speak.
On the resolution as amended, any comments, questions, concerns? On the resolution as amended, any comments, questions, or concerns? Madam Clerk, please call the roll on the resolution as amended.
To adopt as amended.
Supervisor Haas moves to adopt as amended.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Madam Clerk, Supervisor Bowen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I also wanted to mention if committee members want to also co-sponsor at this time. Currently, there are three names. They have the opportunity to do that now or when it gets to the board. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Would anyone like to be added as a co-sponsor at this particular time? Thank you very much. Thank you, public. Appreciate it. Madam Clerk, on the resolution as amended.
Supervisors Haas?
Aye.
Schmidt?
No.
Rommel West?
Aye.
Jurczyk?
No.
Lipscomb?
Aye.
Bowen?
Aye.
Stamper?
Aye.
Cullen?
Aye.
Mr. Chair?
Aye.
7 ayes, 2 noes. The motion to recommend adoption of item number 4 as amended prevails.
Thank the committee. Thank you.
Thank you all for your work. Thank you, public, for your patience.
I know, right?
If individuals that are leaving, please leave quietly so we can continue to move on the agenda. Please leave quietly as we can continue to move on the agenda. Thank you for coming today.
Item number 5.